Shinayin Bet, and we are at number 6. The Nishmas Avram is going through the part that you really wanted. This is what people really want to see in Nishmas Avram. Meaning, we've been learning sort of in depth various topics that he talks about, but here he's just giving you a digest. Here's the treatment. Here's what you're allowed to do. Here's the treatment. Here's what you're allowed to do. In single paragraphs. And he's in the section on Chola She'en Bo Sakana, someone who is not dangerously ill, meaning that they're not life-threateningly ill, but they are very sick. Don't read Chola She'en Bo Sakana and think, oh, the person has a cold. This is actually not. This is serious high-level illness. It's just that, you know, his life is not on the line. You know, someone one day has to explain to me, not right now, but the way they have terms for somebody being in serious condition, in critical condition. So I never really know what that means. But the like Chola She'en Bo Sakana.
Please don't have patients like that.
Okay. So number 6 deals with injections for this Chola She'en Bo Sakana, and he writes zrikot, injections. There are a whole bunch of words that we're going to pick up in this. He's all sorts of interesting words that we're going to have to translate. Mutar lahazrik afil lachola she'en bo sakana zrikat hat orit o toch shririt. He says you're allowed to inject for a patient who's not in danger an injection which is subcutaneous, tat orit, or toch shririt, which is
intramuscular.
Exactly. Shririm are muscles. So toch shririt is intramuscular. And the reason why you're allowed to do it is because these only involve the basic rabbinic prohibition against medical care, but there's no higher prohibition involved as opposed to intravenous. Because if you want to do an intravenous shot, then you have to aspirate blood to make sure that you're seated properly in the vein, and drawing blood out of a blood vessel is a biblical prohibition. It's a dicier thing. Right, but you don't want
to
see. Right, but you don't want to get blood out.
Right.
You know, if blood shows up,
you
know, but that's fine. In other words, if blood shows up, that means this person was in danger.
Okay.
When you're trying to do an intramuscular one, so and it's not what you want to have happen. Whereas when you do something intravenous, you want blood to show up. That's a different story.
What is the malacha if you draw blood?
Nitilas neshama. Literally taking a life. And as the Gemara puts it, mali katla kula, mali katla palga. What's the difference between killing someone fully and killing someone partially? You're drawing blood from them, and we don't make a distinction. There are other possible explanations for what it could be. We're not going through the whole discussion now, but it's anytime you draw blood, you have a problem.
Even on Shabbos?
Sorry?
Even on
Shabbos. On Shabbos. Not on Shabbos, it's medical care. Right. I mean, there is the discussion about a child for one's parent and things like that. You know, better not to do it for one's own parent. Then he deals with some of the side issues that come up in giving a shot. So he says, "Mutar likroa es niyar ha'atifa shemisaviv lamizrakim sakiyot l'chula." He says you're allowed to tear open the paper envelope or bag or whatever it is that it's in. That's not a problem. It's destructive. You're not creating a vessel in any way. You're destroying. And you're even allowed to cut open the envelope on the point where it's designated for cutting it open. I might have thought that was a problem because of the law of mechateich. I'm not supposed to cut the av malaches. I'm not supposed to cut a hide on a particular line in order to create something of certain dimensions that will then be useful. However, that's not what I'm doing here. I'm not making a useful kli with the envelope, so it's fine to cut it even along the line that's designated for that. The only thing is,
if it's scored
on a spot. In other words, you're cutting on a particular place.
Like cutting, like with
perforated.
When you cut open the package.
Oh, to take the needle out.
Yeah. Lo yikrab makom ha'otiyot. You should avoid cutting on the place where the letters are. You don't want to cut through letters. That's erasure. Ach mutar likrab bein shtei osiyot shel mila achas. But you're allowed to tear between the letters of one word. Now, I found that interesting because we talk about the issue of not joining letters to make a word. And that's a problem on Shabbos. That's a form of writing. Assuming I joined them permanently and they had been separated, that's an issue. So why is it okay for me to erase a word fundamentally by tearing between the letters? So I brought you source Aleph on the sheets. this is the piece Mishmer Shabbos Kehilchasa that he references in his footnote. Rav Neuvert writes the following: Ubeinyan hakriya bein shtei osios shlamila achas. As far as tearing between the letters of a single word, lichara yesh lahaviraya leesor. There should be proof to prohibit this. Mehadachotech bein osios shal Hashem yisbarach debekia gav nachayev. He says there's a rule having nothing to do with Shabbos. If someone writes the letters of God's name, and then you tear God's name, so that you didn't destroy any letters, but you did separate it, you have damaged, you have destroyed God's name, and there's a prohibition against doing that, having nothing to do with Shabbos. It's a general principle of lo sasud kein l'Hashem Elokeichem, you're not supposed to erase God's name. So if that's called erasure, then why isn't it called erasure here? Ulam, however, he says, Shamati nagon or Shlomo Zalman or Bach, de'ein lochush, or Shlomo Zalman said there is no concern for this. Didavka le'in mechikas Hashem yisbarach matzanu b'chiyah gavna, kevan shetziruf ha'osios hu goreim lishmo yisbarach. He says, when it comes to erasing God's name, it actually is different from erasing any other word. Because when you erase, when you take the letters of God's name and you put them together, you've created something meaningful. Now, all words are meaningful, but it's meaningful on another level. It's God's name. It has special legal status. And if you separate those letters that have been together, then you nullify, you cancel that joining of the letters. As opposed to our case, there is no concern in separating between the letters, because each letter stands on its own, has its own value independently. You haven't destroyed the value of the letter. The letter stands on its own. I'll tell you frankly that I don't understand, you know, what he's saying. In other words, it's true that a word, a generic word, doesn't have the same meaning as Hashem's name. But nonetheless, there is such a thing as combining letters to form a word. I have difficulty with it. And in fact, he does too. As he continues to write, when I had the Shemir Shabbos Kilchasa quotes on here, I have to retype them. So typo on that one. It's not al, it's ach. Ach, however, he says, Ditzarech iyun katan. This requires some examination. This permission. Mehadisimin shin mem Mishnah Berurah sif katan ches to asur lechaber osios. He says the Mishnah Berurah writes that you're not allowed to join letters. Now, what he's talking about with joining letters is source base. The Mishnah Berurah says that you're not allowed on Shabbos, talking about, to take silver letters and attach them to a curtain. Let's say you had a paroches, right? You have a curtain on your aron, and there are letters that are attached to it in some way, and one of them falls off, and you want to now reattach it. So aside from the question of how you're going to attach it, are you tying something or whatever, that's called writing, by putting those letters together on the curtain. So he says, I don't understand. If that's a problem, right, putting letters together on a surface is a problem because you are now making a word. So, what's the difference between writing in that way and erasing in that way? Shlomo Zalman says that that's a different story because that is like joining the letter to the parchment, or taking it off of the parchment. But separating letters is not a problem. In other words, he says the issue there that Mishnah Berurah is talking about is not an issue of writing by joining them to form a word. It's an issue of attaching a letter permanently to a surface, is his problem of writing. I still have difficulty with it, but I'm not going to look a gift kula in the mouth. Like we saw last week when we talked about this really remarkable leniency. We talked about the issue of taking medicine that you began to take before Shabbos, and it was very difficult. But he said that if someone has a condition which doesn't require medication consecutive days forever, or for even for 7 days or 10 days, but from time to time they need to treat it. As long as they started treating it at some point. They treated it on Wednesday, January 3rd. And then now it's Shabbos, and it's February 6th, and they need the medicine again. They're allowed to take the medicine. That's called ongoing. That was what he had said then. So, you know, I didn't understand that either. But again, if Shlomo Zalman Orbach is willing to sign his name to it, you know, I'm good with that.
Is this just a medical situation, or just a general rule?
It sounds like it's a tzorech ruling. It's a need. Now, there are other needs besides medical. For example, let's say I have guests over for a Shabbos meal and my food for them is in a package. And the package has this sort of thing. And I want to know, can I tear open the letters? If I don't, then there's no food to offer them. You could have a situation like that where there's a tzorech, a need. It's a non-medical need. So what he seems to be saying is between the letters is fine. Again, assuming it's a case of need. I'd like to have potato chips. So we need to make some distinction.
Some people say that's a need.
Yeah. Going back into the Nishmas Avram, he writes, Asur lenakos es mekoma hazraka betzemer gefen safug bechomer chitui. He says, and this is something we actually talked about a few weeks ago, you're not allowed to clean the spot where you're going to make the injection using wool, using cotton that has a cleaning agent absorbed in it. Ela yishtamesh bevad sinteti, she'eino sofeg. You should use some kind of a synthetic material that's not absorbent. O yishpoch es hakahal al mekoma hazraka, or pour the alcohol on the place where you're going to make the injection. And then wipe it up using the cotton. The idea being you're not going to end up squeezing out that cotton, as opposed to if it was absorbed in the cotton when you have to squeeze it out in order to disinfect the site. So that's the difference. Yishtadel hishtamesh, and then the last point is always an interesting one. I gave a shiur about this a few years ago and brought some of the sources on the source sheet here. Yishtadel hishtamesh b'mizrak shekvar mechuberet lo miba'od yom machat mat'ima. He says you should use a shot that already has the needle attached from before Shabbos. That's the concern that he has, is that you're taking something, if you assemble it on Shabbos, you're taking something that was not functional, snapping it together in a way that is permanent, unless someone is going to break it, it's going to be permanent. So you're snapping it together in order to provide the injection. That's the concern, yeah.
I have a question, because I actually remember the last time that I used glass syringes was when I worked in Israel once. Now everything is disposable. Do these rules differ if you're talking about glass, reusable, assembling? Like when you talk about you're putting something together and then it's permanent. Yeah, but as soon as you give the shot, it's going in the garbage.
Correct.
So it's assembled in a permanent way, but it's not ever going to be reused. It's a single use.
Right. So the answer is, let's read the rest of the paragraph and then you'll see the answer. He says, "Ubishas hadchak," in a case where you're stuck, meaning you need to give the injection and there is no pre-assembled needle. So mutter gam lachaber mizrak lamachad matima, you would be allowed to join the shot with the appropriate needle, and then what he doesn't say here, but is in fact the rest of the discussion, you would have to do it with intent to break it, and then you would actually do that. Now there's breaking and there's capping, which is done. But I think the goal here is to do something to break it so that it wouldn't be usable.
But most of the needles now, you have a thing you snap on.
Right.
And then you don't cap because you stick yourself when you cap. And then you can never use it again because
right.
You snap this thing on. And
so that's what you would do if you were stuck. The ideal would be for it to be pre-assembled. But if that's not an option, then you would go with the attach it and snap it. Yeah. That's what you would end up doing. You're not disassembling. No one is recommending that you actually disassemble the needle. I don't even know if that's doable.
Well, yeah, because usually like if I withdraw medication from one vial, I usually change needles and put on a new one that hasn't punctured already the rubber.
So you're using two needles with every...
You have to take one off, dispose of that one, and put the new one on.
Mm-hmm.
That's the routine if you do it that way.
Right. Is there an option of having these pre-assembled?
Sometimes. If you know you're going to do it.
Yeah.
No, that's what I'm saying. You know you're going to be on call on Shabbos, and you know.
It would have to be something that comes in a package, sterile, assembled.
Yes.
You're not going to open it on Friday if you have to open the package, leave it sitting, or put it together and leave it.
Some things do come.
Those are pre-filled and pre-everything, right?
You have syringes that have years of time.
Yeah.
You may not have them.
Rare. Yeah. It's rare.
Sometimes you can't.
No, usually they have just like gray rubber thing at the top and you have to stick the needle on. It may be pre-filled syringe for you, but you have to put the needle on.
Stick the needle on.
Right. If you take a look on the sheet, I give you a few sources on this issue. First, Rabbi Eliezer Waldenberg in the Tzitz Eliezer, it's source Gimel. He says, יש גם לחלק בין תיקון בגוף הדבר כפי שהמה הדוגמאות שהביא לבין הרכבה זמנית דוגמת הרכבה מחת במזרח. He gives you one reason for distinguishing and permitting. He says there's a difference between when you fix something in the standard way, like the examples that the questioner wrote to the Tzitz Eliezer, and this temporary attachment that you're doing when you put together the needle. He says the whole goal is temporary. See, the difference between saying it's temporary and what you were saying before, Jeff, is the, like the case of writing. If someone said to you, well, I'm going to write something down on Shabbos, but then I'm going to cross it out, right? Or I'm going to erase it. So the answer would be, doesn't matter. It's real writing, which you're now going to make worse, actually, by erasing afterwards. That doesn't help us. As opposed to an act which is inherently a temporary act. And what the Tzitz Eliezer is arguing is, since this is a one-time use, and it's never going to be reused at all, and you know part of your protocol is that this is only for a one-time use, maybe that can be considered a temporary assembly. As opposed to the writing, where it's real writing and you're just going to erase it later.
So there aren't really reusable syringes in general use in our society anymore. However, there's a difference between other medical devices that you may have to use on Shabbat that are single use versus they can be sterilized and they'll be reused.
Right.
Do these rules apply differently for different types of device? In other words, if you use it once and it's finished and
yeah.
you're going to destroy it,
yeah.
Maybe certain rules apply, but what happens if it's something that you're going to sterilize and reuse?
Then you have a real problem.
Or like an insulin. Like
or even a scope of some kind.
I think a pacemaker, but they need their...
I mean, if you're talking about a pacemaker, you're already in a different league.
Yeah. A scope is the same thing. A scope is a whole different league, too.
You're not using that for Chol HaShem Bo Sakana. You're using that for Chol HaShiyesh Bo Sakana, someone who's dangerously ill. All bets are off at that point.
Like an insulin treatment, a patient at home will give themselves insulin and they won't always change the needle every time. They don't want to buy so many needles. So they'll reuse the needle several times.
Right, but patients with insulin are also Chol HaShiyesh Bo Sakana. They're also dangerously ill. We don't play games with diabetes.
So they can, but it's not single use.
Right.
Unless on Shabbat they do it sooner.
Right. I mean, but patients with unstable blood sugar are being told also to test their blood, which
right.
you know, can involve drawing
also,
blood.
Right.
You know, I mean, yes,
right,
we have them do a whole bunch of things. But that's one reason for leniency. If you take a look at Source Dalet, the Shulchan Aruch Harav, the first Lubavitcher Rebbe, in his Shulchan Aruch, wrote Dalet. Even if you're dealing with a clay made up of, a utensil made up of multiple parts, where you attach them together with force, something that requires gevura, requires strength, and it requires umnus. You have to know what you're doing. He's not dealing with shots. I mean, he's writing this in the 18th century.
Maybe that's what they...
Maybe. So he's talking about assembling things in general. That's construction. That's full construction. And you'd be liable for building. Assuming it's made to last long. If it's not made to last a long time, it's temporary construction. It's only rabbinically prohibited. Unless it's not made to last at all, in which case it won't be prohibited at all. But that's not our case. There's more to be said. I brought you Ravadia also, but I think I'm going to skip him in order to go further with this. But the reason I brought the Shulchan Aruch Harav is the question of exactly what is involved in assembling the shot. How much strength and force is actually necessary in order to do it? Does one piece just slide into another, or are you really doing something that requires strength and force and skill?
But that's the prohibition that by which you judge all of these paragraphs.
Correct. Okay. Number 7, back in the Nishmas Avram. This is a case that he actually referred to like last week or the time before that. Trufot kedeshi tuchal lahorot. Right? Medicine, which a woman is going to take so that she can become pregnant. Isha asher tzvicha lakachas trufos b'meshach kama yamim retzufim. A woman has to take medicine for a series of days kedei lafsher lo laharot, so that she can become pregnant. Olim noah herayon, or to prevent pregnancy. And he writes in parentheses, when she has permission from a proper rabbi. Mutter lo lazos kein mibli lahafsik netilas on b'shabbos. So she's allowed to take those on Shabbos as well. She doesn't need to stop on Shabbos. It's the same rules that we've talked about for continuing medicine that you started to take before Shabbos. Turn the page. Isha hamekabela zrikos yom yom shel progesterone. Which you see, number 8. It's page Shin Ayin Gimel. Yes. If a woman is getting progesterone, so tekabel as hazrika shel Shabbos, mutzai Shabbos. So he says you can delay the Shabbos injection until after Shabbos is over. Vein heter lekabel as hazrika biyom Shabbos asmo. He says there is no permission to take the injection on Shabbos proper. Vimchal yom tov biyom hashishi or biyom harishon. And what if you can't, because it's going to be Yantif on Friday or Yantif on Sunday. Now what do you do? The Kol Shekeinim Shnei Yimei Rosh Hashanah Kodmim L'Shabbos. So what do you do if it's Thursday, Friday, or Rosh Hashanah, and then you have Shabbos? Aleh L'Kabel Zrikos Im Tvach Pi'ula Aroch. So he says, what she should do is get injections that will act over a long period of time. He uses the word depot here. I don't know what this is. I know what a depot is, but
it's a slow release.
Yeah.
Volume of it?
Yeah.
It's usually just a slow release.
Okay. So he says that's what you do. But yamim rishon.
Only if they have it, right?
I would assume.
Why can't she take the birth control pill at night?
Why can't she take the birth control pill? I think because when you're dealing with the birth control pill, you're dealing only with a derabanan, right? It's a rabbinic prohibition of medicine on Shabbos. And we've already said that we don't have a concern with medicine that you're taking over a series of days. But this injection that you're talking about, is this intravenous?
No,
it's not.
It's iron.
Intramuscular. So then it's the same thing.
It should be the same thing as any iron.
Interesting. It could be, I'm guessing, you tell me, is there a difference in terms of timing issues for birth control medication or versus timing for progesterone? Like, do we care more about the timing when you're dealing with the birth control or ovulation ones?
Timing of day?
Yeah.
Well, no, so you would get like a progesterone depot injection lasts for 3 months, so there's no need to,
No, but he's asking why wasn't it recommended with the birth control one to just take the Shabbos dose, Motzai Shabbos?
Oh, because you have to take it every 24 hours.
Oh, it does have to be timed.
It's going
to
be gone from your system in 24 hours. If you wait an extra 4 hours to take it, it's too
bad. Interesting. Okay.
Efficacy will be diminished.
There's actually, I read an article last week, the week before, I don't know if I saw this on my own or you sent this to me, about timing in medicine and how they're now becoming more sensitive to the effects of circadian rhythms and timing for medicines that were thought not to matter. So I don't know if that's going to play a role in this and cause this to change. But that's where this is right now. Number 9, tipul monea. What about preventive medication? He says, "Im achole yodei alafi simanim mesuyamim shem lo yikach ka'et trufot yisbol mikevim chazakim." Let's say the patient knows, based on various symptoms, that if he doesn't take medicine now, he is going to suffer from great pain. So the case he's about to give is the migraine case. Muter kvar lekabel tipul monea. So he can take this preventive medicine now. Lachein chole asovel mehetkefim shel migrena. So if a patient suffers from migraine attacks, and he knows it begins with a light headache, or it comes with certain symptoms in his eyes, so he can get care now. He's already called choleshein bosakana, even when the actual headache hasn't started. Okay.
What if he takes like the further preventive ones, or even if you don't have symptoms, some people that have severe migraines take it every single day, even when they don't start to have like the early like.
So he's already started it.
Right. So if it's something that he's taking daily anyway, it's like that's his regular meds. Medication. Correct.
It's more
serious. Yeah.
It's more painful.
Sorry.
No, interesting questions. Can you do it on Yom Kippur?
Right, well, that brings you to the discussion about pills on Yom Kippur. Is that needed to be taken with food? Can it be taken alone? And so forth. Number 10. Tipul bat chorim. mitchorim are hemorrhoids. So he says, hasovel mitchorim. Sorry.
I just didn't know there was a word.
Oh, yeah. No, it's actually in Chumash.
Really?
Yes. So, it's Parshas Kisavo. Hasovel mitchorim, someone who suffers from tchorim, mutar lo lakachas b'shabas trufa hamonat atzirot. So he's allowed to take, on Shabbos, he's allowed to take medicine which prevents constipation. That would be permitted. Atzor is the word in Israel on a stop sign. Actually, I don't know if they were words on stop signs. I don't remember now. But atzor means stop.
But yes. No one listens.
Yeah, that's another story. But he's allowed to take this this medicine on Shabbos. I want to come back to something that Titz Eliezer on this, but just to finish the paragraph first. Mutar lo lishtamesh b'shabbos b'psila. Psila is a suppository. Yeah. I had to look that one up online. I didn't realize that. But he says you're allowed to use a suppository on Shabbos, kitipul bitchorim, kishesovel mikeivim. He can use the suppository as a treatment for the hemorrhoids when he is in pain. Im yesh dimum bizman hayitziah, if there's bleeding when he uses the washroom, nachon shirchatzis mobamayim, so he should wash it with water. And what he's saying is better to wash it with water rather than just apply some kind of a cloth to it, because you are going to bloody whatever cloth you apply. However, if washing it without the cloth is not an option, you'd be allowed to use some kind of a disposable, tissue or whatever it is to clean it, because you're throwing it away right afterwards, so the issue of coloring the paper isn't an issue. In the same way that a person with a bloody nose, he's going to get to, is allowed to blow his nose on Shabbos, and we don't say, well, you're going to, color the tissue. He's still able to do so, as we'll see. If you take a look on the sheet, source Vav, this is the Tzitz Eliezer. Vav and Zion are tshuvos of the Tzitz Eliezer that deal with this issue. In Vav, he says, Sheila, question. Misha sovel al tchorim, someone who has hemorrhoids. And the other word that's used for it, he has in parentheses, is meridin. Meridin from, well, actually, I guess, that maybe it's
from,
not.
From
I was gonna, no, I was going to say meridin is like lumro, to rebel. Because they're emerging like that. But I wonder if it's not. I wonder if it's just the cognate of hemorrhoid.
What about like?
Hey, meridin. So, oh, you read it? I don't know. Maybe it is, for all I know.
Why not Farid?
Well, Farid is in veins, but this is a mem. But this is a mem.
I know. Well,
I don't know. In any case, someone who has these, Ukshayitzia Kasha Goremes Lo Kevim, and when he has a hard time using the washroom, he's in pain. So the doctor says, before going to sleep every night, he should take 2 spoonfuls of what sounds like paraffin oil. Glycerin. Vizos gamla acharsha yisrape, and he's supposed to do that even after it gets better. Because it will grease the area where the excrement is going to come out. And that way it'll come out easily. So the question is, can he take this paraffin oil Friday night?
Why not?
Well, the reason why not would be that this is a medical thing. It's not something that people normally eat. And it's being done for a condition that he doesn't currently have.
But the doctor asked to take it every day, the same as he does any other medical treatment.
Right. So you'll see what he says.
What?
Yeah, no, you're right. You're right. In a Hanami, it's true. Let's see what he does. He says, Tshuva. Aleph. Mikevan she'ein shtia zos l'shem refua. He says, first of all, this isn't even medical care, what you're doing here. He says, "V'chol akavanamba zayuki rakdei lishmori ve'kach shelo yuzku v'ridei hayitziyah." He says the point is only to keep himself from hurting the veins that are there. Im kein yesh ledamo zel hanifsek b'shulchan aruch harachaim shin chavches chav gimel denosden svog b'chatichos begadim yveishim v'chadashim she'enon l'refua l'kidei shlo yisritu abegadim es hamaka. He says when someone has a wound that is healing and the skin is tender, so he's allowed to put a bandage on that spot in order to keep it from being harmed by the abrasion of whatever material he's wearing, whatever cloth he's wearing. We don't call that medical. It's not medical. It's simply a bandage. He says, that's the way I look at the oil. The oil is like a bandage, so to speak, to shield the surface there. Dachanami Masha Shotzes Hashem and Paraffin Ukadeh L'Shamein Is Hayitziya V'Yignua Yidei Kach V'Yidei Hayitziya Shalo Yisura Tumei Hayitziya. He says the point is only to shield the veins on that spot. V'Gam Achleishin Yisrape Mutar L'Amshich L'Shtos HaParaffin L'Shem Matara HaAmura. Even after he's gotten better, he can keep on drinking this. Just like the Shulchan Aruch rules regarding the wound. You could put a bandage on the wound after it has healed. The concern with bandages is often that you're going to take some kind of a plaster, some kind of an ointment and smear it on. But that's not what you're doing here. This is just there prophylactically as a protection. And he says, therefore, there's no concern. So even before you get to the question of this is a medicine he's been taking, he says this isn't even medicine at all.
No, I don't get that part. Why is a band-aid not medicine? Why is this not medicine?
So he's saying because it is preventive. And it's not, I mean, medicine can be preventive also. But he's arguing that which one takes when nothing is wrong is not in the decree of medication. I'll tell you what I think the reason is behind it. We saw this discussed a few weeks ago when we dealt with the issue of taking medicine that you've been taking before, and I think in terms of prophylactic medicine also, I don't have the sheets here for it anymore. It was a ways back. But one of the reasons why we have this gezeira, this decree about grinding things up on Shabbos to make medicine, is because people who are sick are very upset. And if you're going to allow them to take medicine, they're going to do whatever they need to do in order to get the medicine. So ban medicine, and then you don't have to worry that they're going to come to grind something up. However, the person who is not currently ill is not going to violate anything in order to get this treatment. It's not as pressing on his mind. In the same way that we talk about this in other areas of halacha, we talk about, for example, allowing somebody to take stuff out of a fire. If there's a fire, and the fire department is on its way and so forth, but his food, his Shabbos food, is stuck inside, so we don't let him go in to get his Shabbos food. Because we're worried that if he does, and he sees something that's on fire, he's going to put it out quickly without even thinking, because he's so upset about the flames consuming his property. So we have this concern for what people do when they're in a certain state of mind. And I think the state of mind of I have to make sure that this is going to be done is not really there. It's certainly not there with the same urgency when the wound is already healed. He just wants to keep it from opening up again. Yeah.
From a practical point of view, when you use the example of medication, you start with therapy and then you have a maintenance dose. You could argue that the maintenance is not to intervene actively, rather to prevent the condition from coming back. So should you or should you not be allowed to take that on Shabbat?
The maintenance dose is still part of the original run of medication, isn't it?
Yes, but at a certain point, the character or the purpose for which it's intended or the effect that it has changes.
Well, I need you to clarify better for me to understand what a maintenance dose is doing.
So let me think about the simple. So he has high blood pressure. I give him medication to restore his blood pressure to normal, and I say stay on it.
If the blood pressure medication would not be taken, what would happen? Pressure would go back up. It is doing something.
And that's different from the example of this band-aid, which is just meant to protect.
Yeah, because maybe it would abrade, maybe it wouldn't abrade. There has to be an external force that's going to do something in order for him to run into trouble. This is a protection in case that external force comes to pass. I think, a distinction.
And have you addressed, I don't know whether it's really substantially different or not, but let's say it's hay fever season, you're taking an antihistamine, your symptoms come under control, and you keep taking it for the entire season so that you prevent the symptoms from recurring. Is that exactly the same as the blood pressure? Is it the same as this bandage? Is it different? Is it not?
Blood pressure. It's that time.
Well, the thing is, there's still an external factor there, which is the pollen count outside or whatever it is.
Possibly, but you know that during that season.
I'm not sure. I actually think there's reason to argue that
during that season, you can have. That's when you take that medication. Maybe it's not continuous and chronic, but you know from mid-July to the end of August, you're going to be running out. That's what happens all the time. And
I don't know. I understand what you're saying, but
and maybe there are better examples that I just can't think
okay,
of.
Okay, what about the woman?
I may kill you.
Gets frequent urinary tract infections, so she takes a small dose of antibiotic preventatively. She doesn't have the infection
that's
right
a good
now,
one. That's good.
But if she doesn't take it, she might not get an infection anyway, but
right.
She might get one if she doesn't.
I think that's more analogous to the bandage.
Right. That yeah. would be like the bandage. She doesn't have it now, but if she doesn't take the medicine, she might
and
get
I think that
she
that's,
normally takes it.
To me, that's also analogous to the hay fever case. You don't actually know what the pollen count is going to be tomorrow. It's not as though there's a constant and predictable state of things which this medicine is correcting for.
But Mickey's idea is within a given season, it's predictable that you're going to have a problem if you don't take it. It's the season.
Mm-hmm. I don't know.
Okay.
I don't know.
Paraffin wax or paraffin oil sounds a lot like mineral oil, which is given as a laxative. Not just these things.
I don't know. You want to inform on this oil?
I had a problem with the example, but if we use it as the example of preventative, that's fine. I really tend to disagree with that a little bit because I do think of it's used as a laxative. It's more than protecting from the pain.
Well, he did say that actually. He said it's more than that. He said it's so that it will come out,
right.
Both in kala, but also he said sidira or mesudar.
Right.
It's meant to make it regular.
So example, so it's just a pure stool softener or a lubricant, and it doesn't stimulate.
Yeah, colace is totally useless. Yeah. Yeah, that's what it is, but it's totally useless. We're going to ban that on Shabbos.
Yeah.
No problem.
I seem to remember colace. They do it for kids?
It's like fiber.
Yeah. It's possible, yeah. I think there was
it's a softener, but
yeah.
It's very popular. It's very popular with elderly. The family doesn't do it.
Okay. So, keep reading in this Tzitz Eliezer, because it gets even more interesting. I skipped his base point, but his gimel point. Still in source above.
I was wondering where base
he said, he has a hard time counting. No, the Gam kishema gamat shtiyat ha-harafin ikedei liyatsev pi'ulat ha-me'ayim v'shehayitziya tehei sidira. He says, also when the purpose of drinking this oil is liyatsev, to establish the functioning of the intestines and for everything to come out in an orderly way, which does sound like it's the laxative effect of some sort. Nira gam kin shiyesh makom latir zos gam b'shabbos. He said, you could permit that too on Shabbos. B'hios ve'ein etzlo kvar l'masa atzirat keva. Because right now, he doesn't have constipation at the moment. Ve'einom argish mechushim. He doesn't feel anything right now. U'ma gam aso hirak al ha'asid shalo yofiu hafra'ot shal atzirah yitziyah kasha. The point is only to prevent it from happening in the future. What he's really doing, what the Tzitz Eliezer is really doing, is he's limiting the gezeira derabbanan against medicine on Shabbos. And saying, it wasn't meant for all things that you ingest or that you do in order to keep your body functioning normally. It's actually meant specifically for the medicines which, something's gone wrong, I need to set them straight. If it's something that's simply preventive, he's good with that. That's what he seems to be saying. And he says, I'll prove it to you. V'hine, b'simen shin chaches, se'if lamed zayin, posek ha-machaber, the Shulchan Aruch rules. Kol ochlim u'mashkim she'machal b'riyim. All foods and drinks which people who are healthy eat, mutar lo ochlan u'lishtosan, therefore, you're allowed to take them for medicinal purposes. V'hol she'enu machal mashke b'riyim, and if it's not something that healthy people eat and drink, asur lo ochlo u'lishtosan, you're not allowed to eat and drink it for medicinal purposes. The prohibition is specifically if you are somebody who just has a mild ache, but you can walk around just fine. But if he doesn't have any ailment, then he's fine to have it, because again, he's doing it as a healthy person. I mean, where this really becomes relevant is the question of supplements. Right? This is the vitamin supplement question. It's something that you take just to maintain regular regular function. It's something that healthy people have also when they don't have anything in particular that's wrong. They're told take vitamin D every day during the winter, or take an aspirin every day, or whatever it is. I think that he sounds like he's very much going in the direction of saying that that will be fine. There's actually, there's a lot of literature on the question, but that's what he's saying. So if you have a food or a beverage that is not normally eaten by healthy people, such as this oil, I suppose, even though you're not allowed to take it for medical purposes, I'm jumping the brackets, but if he's not currently in pain, he'd be allowed to eat, or he'd be allowed to drink the item. So basically what we're saying is, if you have something that is specifically to cure problems, then that's a medicine. If you have something which is also eaten by healthy people, then if you are sick, you wouldn't be allowed to have it, because everybody knows that you're taking it medicinally. But if you're not sick, if you're healthy, then even though it is also used as a cure for problems, that's not your situation. You're eating it as a healthy person. You're ingesting it as a healthy person. That's what he's saying. Yeah. In Zion, he's commenting now on the issue of the suppository. And he writes the following. He quotes the Chubos Imre Yosher. Shanishal al echad shesovel mi mechush moridin chorim. Somebody had the problem. V'haya lo keev gadol meod meod, and he was in great pain. V'ratzulin sa'a imo b'shabas l'levav, and they wanted to travel on Shabbos, violating Shabbos, to travel to Levav for him to get treatment. In other words, they viewed this as a life threatening illness.
He says the argument would be that this is what we call a maka shel chalal. The Shulchan Aruch talks about an internal injury. Maka shel chalal is an internal injury, and so he says it's an internal injury, and therefore you should be allowed to do so. Aval, but on the other hand, when they discuss what qualifies as an internal injury, generally the rule is the davka boa omaka. That's specifically if there is a blister or a wound of some kind inside. It doesn't mean everything that happens inside of a person's body is a maka shel chalal. So what's the answer? Can you take him to Levav on Shabbos or not? So in the Imre Yosher's response, he brought the words of the Bach, Rav Yol Sirkis, dealing with the question of a toothache. Right? The next Monday night medical halacha session at Shari Shemayim, well, it's in March, is going to be on dental emergencies on Shabbos. So the Bach discusses toothaches. Dimavur dikt ke'ev gadol, I added the wording in brackets. Dikt gadol havi kemaka shel chalal. The position of a Bach is it doesn't have to be a blister or a wound in order for it to qualify as something internal that warrants violating Shabbos. It is sufficient for it to be a great pain that is inside, and you don't know what's wrong. And he was basing himself on the Shulchan Aruch Harav. You have apparently contradictory sources in the Shulchan Aruch Harav, but he showed that the Shulchan Aruch Harav did indeed say if there's a great pain inside, that counts. Why? Because we assume that means there is some kind of an injury inside, and that's what's causing this. So Lizos Hela Haimra Yosher, the Bivada Yeshlismo Kalzela Maisa, or Bifrat the Safik Sakanas Nafashos Lahakel. The Imra Yosher ruled that you could rely on this in practice, and he said, especially when we say if you're in doubt about saving a life, you go leniently. So he says you don't know what's going on, therefore go ahead and do it. That's his statement. The divrei agon Rav Shneur Zalman Khan Siman Shin Chavchesh Shakas Avda Afkei Gadol Lochash Vina Kamaka Shel Cholol. Then what am I supposed to do with the line of the Shulchan Aruch Harav where he said that no, great pain does not automatically qualify as an internal injury? Pirish Tahenu Benoda BeBeirur De Ein Shamaka. He says that's where you know for sure that it's not being caused by a wound inside. It's, you know what the cause is. Aval the Suffik, but if you're not sure, Yesh Lahatir, you should be lenient, like what he wrote in the Kuntras Achwan. Are we clear on what we're saying? I'm going through it a little bit quickly.
Very.
What he's saying is this. You have this case. The guy, they want to take the guy to Lvov. They want to argue that the hemorrhoids count as an internal injury, and an internal injury warrants violating Shabbos. The Shulchan Aruch HaRav has said that the only time you're allowed to violate Shabbos for an internal injury is if it's an injury. There was a blister that may have popped, there's a wound of some kind, and that's what needs to be treated right away. Just having great pain is insufficient. But on the other hand, he also wrote that no, if there's great pain, that is sufficient. So he says, we're following what he says when he says that great pain is sufficient. As far as when he wrote that great pain doesn't do it, that's when you know for sure that the pain is not being generated by an injury. You know that it's being generated by something, you're aware of what the cause is, and you're aware that it's not dangerous, it's not life-threatening, and that's fine.
Only be psychosomatic. I mean, otherwise, how do you... That's something internal that's causing great pain, and you have to know with certainty that it's not caused by tissue injury, or it's hard to...
I mean, you had someone who had chronic, chronic stomach trouble, and as far as they know... Remember, the Shulchan Aruch HaRav is the end of the 18th century, so... You know, he has a set of potential illnesses inside that may not include all the things that we think of. In other words, you know.
Well, I would think it would be irritable bowel as opposed to inflammatory bowel. So, am I right? Is the unifying idea by which we can permit all of these things the fact that it may lead to a threat to one's life? Or is that not necessary?
Well, it may indicate a current threat to one's life, is what he's saying. In other words,
in the previous paragraphs, where you can take, a laxative of a certain type or what have you.
Well, no, that was because he didn't consider it medicine. His argument was that the laxative doesn't constitute medicine.
Okay. The point is that it's great pain.
Sorry? Great pain on this point. Yes. His point here is that this is great pain, and that the great pain is... It's not that the pain in itself permits violating Shabbos biblically, but that this pain, because it's coming from inside, is indicative of something being wrong that could indeed be a danger to life.
But the reason they think it's a danger to life is because it hurts so bad.
Yes, because what other diagnostic tools do you have? You know, and I'm not making fun, but I'm belittling a little bit the 18th century. But the truth of the matter is, my son on Shabbos missed a few steps. He's 10 years old. He's right down the staircase. He's missed a few steps, lands funny on his ankle, and you know the doctor says to me, "Well, the way to know whether it's a break or not is the pain test." You know, so we're still doing this. We're still doing the same thing they're doing in the 18th century.
His last point was here. You know that it's not dangerous.
There's a few things.
So wait, well, that's what he's saying. Not that you know that it's not from a wound, you know what your cause is, and you know it's not dangerous. Yes, if you know it's dangerous, then there's no discussion.
Why was the toothache okay?
Because he didn't. He felt this is an indication of something internal that's really wrong, and it does need to be treated right now. That's what he's saying.
Today we know when we have a toothache whether it probably does the toothache.
I hate to tell you this, but I've given the shear on dental injury, emergencies on Shabbos, I've given it to dentists before, and they tell you that sometimes you don't know. Until you go in there.
They always say they don't know.
The more educated we are now, the more we know we don't know.
It's money jealousy.
But continue here, because there's more to see in this Sitz Eliezer. If you jump down to the fourth line on the page, on the second side, the fourth line, the fifth word, V'yeuyan. You see that? V'yuyan b'sefer mincha Shabbos. See the mincha Shabbos. Shistapei gam kein b'zeh. He also was in doubt about this issue of the Hebrewites and violating Shabbos. V'sidei l'kanu l'kan. He argued each way. V'helad ha'kol l'fi ha'inyan. And he said, you know what? You have to go with the case in front of you. Each case is unique. Ki l'famim hei mitzarim ad shechala kol gufo. Because sometimes they're in such pain that it's like their whole body is ill. V'l'famim hei mitzarim ha'ktas. Sometimes they're only a little bit in pain. V'l'famim yesh b'em gam chashash sakana. And sometimes there's concern for danger. So you really need to diagnose based on the case that's in front of you. U'v'sefer k'tzos ha'shulchan. Reference by the Ashulchan. Pashut be'en of the ke'evat chorim ein kol chashash sal sakana. K'tzos ha'shulchan said, come on, this isn't life and death. It's just not. Ad sh'osra afil l'sum psila. He wouldn't even allow the suppository. V'mneshu refuah, because that's medical treatment. V'hitzir chlasas b'shinui. He said he had to do it in an unusual way. I don't know what an unusual way is. You got me.
With your nose.
So he says, but he says, the K'tzos HaShulchan was not aware of the sources we just saw, and we don't paskin like him. He says, not only are you allowed to use the suppository, which is a derabanan, but he says you could treat it as a full internal wound as well, as the Imre Yosher says, and that's where the Tzitz Eliezer paskins for this situation.
But in fact, it is an internal wound.
What do you mean?
Right? You know, a large, painful hemorrhoid is an internal wound.
It's not like external and internal hemorrhoids.
Okay.
What about an external hemorrhoid?
But it comes from the vein, which is
okay. Well, I thought you had a bad headache. You can take aspirin or something.
Yes.
So if this is great pain, like why would it?
Because we're not talking about taking an aspirin. We're talking about taking him from one city to another to be treated by specialists. Instead of driving to the hospital.
Yeah. Oh, but he said he was suppository. Yeah. But if it's great pain.
Well, that was his ruling. Because right. Yeah, I mean, I don't know. The K'tzos HaShulchan may be unfamiliar with a more, you know, with a more benign case. Yeah. That's the only thing I could think of. All right, let's do number 11, and we'll stop with that. But to finish the category, daleket be'ayin. Daleket is an infection. An infection in one's eye. So he says, b'mikrash of daleket be'ayin, in a case of eye infection, gam lo charifa, even if it's not a very painful infection, mutar leishtam. You're allowed to use eye drops or even a cream. Now what he says here with the cream is something that's going to be relevant in the ensuing paragraphs as well, but the issue of a cream is this. The concern is smearing, correct. There is a prohibition against mimareach. Mimareach is when you smear a cream. It comes from mimacheik. Mimacheik is the av malacha. The av malacha is regarding the set of prohibited malachos, which involve processing leather, processing a hide to make leather. So one of the steps is where they smooth the surface of the hide. That's mimacheik. And the idea is that if I smear cream on a surface, I'm creating a smooth layer. That's mimareach. But that is the grounds for the leniency here. Take a look at source ches on your sheets, where we see the Shmir Shabbos Gilchasa and why he's okay with what I would have expected to be a biblical prohibition. He says it's okay. Why? V'shamati nagon Rishlom Zamanoy Bach de'lo shayach b'ki agav nebishum yisur mimareach. There is no issue of mimareach as biblical prohibition. Kevan she'in shum kavana limroach chalak et hamishchad b'telch ha'ayin. Because you're not trying to rub the cream to make a smooth layer on the eye. So that's it's not the biblical prohibition that we're talking about. It's a dirabanan. But we're good with a dirabanan because eye infections are something we take very seriously.
So you couldn't put a cream on a different kind of infection, but you can your eye.
So he's going to get to other creams when we go further along. He's going to talk about wounds and so forth. So we have to talk about other cases as well. But in terms of the eye, certainly we see the leniency here, and we will see other leniencies as we go along. One we'll be talking about where you rub it in and it's going to be absorbed in the skin. So again, you're not creating a layer of anything. So there will be grounds for leniency in such a case as well. So we'll see that, God willing, next week.
So we're just talking about eye here.